Real Romance Stream Mini, brought to you by the Undercover Capes Podcast Network. Hey everyone, and welcome to another episode of Real Romance. I'm your host, Robert, also known as Bamfing Bob, and with me as always is my lovely wife, Brittany.
Hello.
And tonight, we are going to discuss all of the spooky shows that we watched in the month of October. A lot of really great things to stream, a lot of really good things to watch. While we did do a lot of TV watching, movies, everything, we solely focused on scary shows for this stream mini.
Not as many as I would like. More scary.
The thing is that you, at home, you could watch so many more. Like, I know you watched, like, what was it, 4 seasons of Teen Wolf?
I'm on season 5 now.
Oh my god. And how is it?
It's good.
You like it?
Yeah, I love Dylan O'Brien.
Yeah. On the list of things that we watched, we didn't want to make it pure horror. We kind of wanted to divert a little bit into subgenres. So we watched some shorter things, like an anthology called Blood Drive, Bite Size Halloween. What was that, on Hulu?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We watched a show called Lore, and then we watched Halloween Wars, which mm-hmm. is a cooking show.
Sort of, yeah.
But we have Lovecraft Country.
There you go.
We had Carnival Row.
And Castle Rock.
And we had Castle Rock. So there's a lot of different things to discuss. So we're going to try to keep this quote-unquote mini. But let's just jump right into it. Where do you want to start?
Let's start with Carnival Row.
Okay.
It's the most different.
Yes.
But it is still very horror-esque.
Yeah.
The premise is that there are two main characters played by Orlando Bloom and Kara, I'm about to butcher her last name.
Devangeline.
Is that? Sure.
Delevangeline.
I don't know. I always butcher it.
No, I always think of Princess and the Frog. Evangeline. Yeah, well, nobody loves Kara Devangeline. But I actually do think she does a really good job in this show.
No, don't say no one. Just me. I just have a distaste for her.
True that. Didn't we not watch that one show, that one movie about
Valerian?
Valerian. We didn't watch that one because you were like, ugh, she's in it, I don't like it.
I have a distaste for her. It doesn't even make any sense. There's no reason. I just do.
She was the worst part of Suicide Squad, though. I will say that.
She's a fairy.
Season 1 is out, so we're just going to preface it.
Spoilers.
We're going to spoil some shit.
We find out he is actually half fae.
Right. His mom was, but when he was a kid, like, wasn't he, like, slightly deformed, like, because he's a halfling or something?
His wings were small, so his mom had them cut off.
Right, so that instead of being persecuted
and
still not using his wings, it's like, fuck it, we'll cut off his wings and let him pass as a normal human.
He is a detective, and he is investigating these fae murders.
So, there was a huge war. Since the fairies lost, there are a lot of refugees coming to this place called the Burg.
Well, the fairies didn't really lose. The Burg, like, their country just pulled out. So the fairies are losing and getting slaughtered, but the Burg was fighting alongside the fairies, and then they pulled out and left them to die.
Right. And so, technically, they are kind of a safe haven, but it's, like, really bad racial oppression.
It's like being a slave versus a free black man back in the day, when even though they were free, they didn't have nearly as many rights. And they were oppressed and hated.
They're not all fairies, but
no, but they're all fae.
Right, but they all fall under that umbrella. There's some that are exotic hookers, a lot of smaller
sex
jobs.
Workers.
They're indentured.
Yeah, they have, like, in order to get over there, they have to pay in some way.
Right, and so they have to give their time, and even after they've done their time, they're still secondhand citizens. My apologies for using hooker. I couldn't think of the word.
Sex worker.
Yeah, there's a special fairy brothel where they go, and it's kind of an exotic thing. There's one particular character, and he's a puck, and a puck is kind of like a goat man, right?
Puck is a derogatory term.
Yeah, but it's a bit like a fawn.
Yeah, horns and hooves.
But he is apparently very rich. He moves into this very wealthy neighborhood, and he's trying to acclimate, and that's a really good secondary story.
He is literally called a fawn. That's the name of his, like,
so he's a fawn, but they're all called puck.
No, puck is a derogatory term for a fawn,
right? Because of, I'm assuming, Midsummer Night's Dream.
Correct.
He's a detective, and he's exploring this string of murders happening in the Burg.
Mm-hmm.
Cara Devangeline's character, what is her, it's something weird.
Vignette, and what's Orlando Bloom's character's name?
He always shortens it.
Philo is what they call him.
Yeah, but his name is like Philomena or Philomenius or some shit.
It's from his last name.
Yeah.
Philo and Vignette were lovers. back when he was a soldier, but she thinks he's dead, and she manages to finally get over to the Berg, and then she finds out he's not dead, and it's her journey of trying to navigate this new world. Meanwhile, something is also killing Faye, and there's all this prejudice, and there's all these political things going on, where the prime ministry guy, I don't know his official title, he's not exactly pro-Faye, but he doesn't want to kill them and kick them out either.
Yeah.
While there's his opposition, who definitely does, but then he ends up dying, his daughter takes over, and she very much takes up the mantle mm-hmm. of killing Faye as well.
Right, it's kind of like in the 1950s and 60s, where it's like the right wing absolutely hated and wanted to kill blacks versus the left wing, which tolerated. Like, there wasn't a whole lot of, like...
Acceptance,
and like, oh yeah, we're gonna make you equals. It was more like, we'll put up with you.
We'll let you do the work we don't want to do, yeah, and we'll pay you some for it.
But we're also not going to treat you like you deserve to be treated.
Like, we're not gonna kill you on site, but we're not gonna pay you a fair wage or give you a fair shake either.
Right.
And we'll touch more on discrimination and stuff when we talk about Lovecraft County. Oh, God. Because there's a lot in that as well. Right.
In this story, there's a lot of, like, love-hate relationships. Philo and Vignette, they still have a chemistry because they were in love. But she just has so much bad blood against him for not telling her. And
he was trying to save her life and do the right thing, but it really wasn't that nice of a thing to do.
And it's also, there's a secondary thing of him not, like, owning up to being a fairy or a half-fairy.
I mean, she knows.
Yeah, she knows, but next to no one else does. And when he finally confides in somebody, it blows up in his face.
Yeah, to be fair, they try to kill him when they find out.
Yeah. He really does have a good character arc near the end where he's, like, kind of given a fork in the road whether or not he can claim his ancestry or he can blend in with humans and get away with it.
By the end, he finds out who his mom is, he finds out who his dad is.
Yeah, he goes from being a completely unknown orphan to knowing who both his parents are, which is cool.
At the end of the season, we leave them in basically a concentration camp. They are all confined to Carnival Row, which is, like, the equivalent of Skid Row.
But, like I said, the secondary story with the fawn... They're really only called pucks, though, in the story.
Yeah, because we're seeing
it from the human perspective. I suppose the puck, though, he calls himself that because he's in that, like...
He's the only rich fae that we ever meet. And we don't really know how he got...
We do, and it's very wrong. He gets out of his indentured servitude, and then he ends up making money by hunting down and catching...
I forgot about
...other
that.
Fairies.
And that he hunts and catches them and makes all this money off of catching...
He's a trader.
Yeah, he's basically catching escaped slaves.
Right, he's a race trader, but he is so good at it that he makes a vast fortune. Like, a ridiculous amount of money.
The worst part is that the politician lady that takes over, she's literally half black, and she's like, yeah, my family was persecuted for being black, but the Fae aren't people.
Yeah, fuck those guys.
They have more differences than just the color of their skin. It's literally exactly what race wars were fought on back in the day.
Right, only instead of just being black, these people are, like, casting spells and flying around.
I saw none of them casting spells. Yeah. I don't think they have magic.
Well, they have access to, like, ancient,
that
like,
one lady.
Fairy stuff. Yeah, there's several that, like, pull from magical means.
They literally don't let them fly, ever.
Well, because they get shot on sight because it's seen as, you know, like, against the rules or whatever. So, tell me, what in this story would constitute it as a scary or Halloween type show?
Well, I mean, the monstrous creature killing all the Fae is pretty nasty.
Mm-hmm.
We find out that it's, like, linked to someone's life, and it's super nasty looking.
It is disgusting. Yeah.
I don't remember if they gave
it
a name.
The creature is
a serial killer ruled by a master.
So it has murder, it has monsters, but there's also a very rich backstory and world building involved.
There's a lot of discrimination and political hate, and
there's also because this came on Amazon Prime,
there's a lot of naked people.
There is a lot of naked people, a lot more than you would say.
There was no sex scenes that were, like, just there to be sex scenes. They all made sense.
You think we're gonna watch season 2?
Maybe.
I enjoyed it well enough for season 2, but
it's
honestly,
not out yet, so
if we have so much other stuff, it may
it depends on when it comes out.
So Blood Ride is an anthology series where in the beginning of the show, there's a bus driver and he gets on this bus and then it shows all the people riding the bus and every one of them has a story that's told in the anthology. We find out later that each of these people actually were murdered. They're all either victims or killed in some manner during the show.
Full disclosure, it is Norwegian, so it isn't Scandinavian.
But yeah, it's subtitled, but it is okay.
And I just gotta say...
No, it's not subbed. It is dubbed?
It's dubbed. Was weird... When you look at the dubs, English is kind of close to Scandinavian because some of the dubs almost look like the actors were saying it.
Right, or like the words are similar enough where...
You couldn't tell. That was a little weird, but unrelated, just a weird note.
So there's 6 episodes, and each of them is very different, and we'll just go through each of them very briefly.
So the first one was about this family moves to the country because they're having money troubles, and they're trying to save money, and the wife finds out that there's this special rock where you can sacrifice things, and you'll get, like, money and stuff. So she sacrifices, like...
Like a mouse she finds in her house.
And she gets, like, $20. I don't know if it's the equivalent of... It's 20 euros,
No, but she's like, what the hell? I got nothing. And the lady she learns it from is like, well, yeah, the bigger the sacrifice, the bigger the reward. The more you give up on the sacrificial rock, the better your payoff is. And so they show up to the town, and everyone has their pets that they're loving on.
They're like, we love them.
You find out later that they're only loving these pets and growing attached so that someday they might kill them on the killing rock, make a small fortune.
You don't know necessarily that they will kill them. They just say, well, we always have one just in case. In case they fall on hard times.
And it's kind of fucked. So but
they do warn you not to get greedy.
Right. And so the mom kills the family dog and makes a little bit of money. And she's like, what the hell? I killed the family dog.
And they're like, did you love the dog? And she's like, no.
But my daughter and husband did.
And they're like, well, all that matters is how much you felt about it.
Right. And so she goes in to kill her husband.
Should we leave the ending?
Yeah, well...
It's a good one. I liked it.
Yeah, it's kind of like Pet Sematary, only with a purpose.
Sort of. And then there was one called Three Sick Brothers, and it's this story of this brother that clearly just left, like, the mental asylum.
Yeah, and so his two brothers pick him up, and they're like, well, let's go out to Dad's cabin and have a party.
And they pick up a hitchhiker on the way, and things go really bad, and the mom has to come find him.
Right, because... But they're all real partiers, and they're crazy, and the girl, she's, like, having a good time, until she realized that even though one of the brothers is crazy,
the other two are
really insane. And we find out that the brother, he's not the crazy one. He actually...
They're all crazy.
Yeah.
Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, but he went to the crazy house, but the other brothers clearly were involved. They got off the hook.
Right.
But we're not going to go into too much spoiler because it's actually a really good one with a great twist.
These are all really good, so I don't want to spoil the ending they're on Netflix. So the next one was called Bad Rider, and it was basically the story of this privileged little brat named Olivia, and she's in this new writing course. But then, like...
She finds out there's a guy in the class who's writing stories about her.
And it starts to affect her real life.
Right, it starts coming to life. And she finds out that by writing what you know and by making those around you suffer, it comes to life.
Her roommates try to kill her and her boyfriend tries to kill her and all these different things.
And so it's kind of a struggle to see who's doing the writing, how to get back at them.
And there's actually a twist and then another twist at the end of this.
Yeah, it gets double twisty.
I didn't particularly like the beginning of this one because Olivia is just a very unlikable character.
And so you're like, yeah, kill her.
It was so good at the end. It made up for how annoying Olivia was the whole time.
The twist in it is really good.
I think part of the reason why I thought Olivia was annoying was her dubbed over voice. The next one's called Lab Rats, and I really liked this one. Basically, this pharmaceutical industry has this new prototype. I don't remember what it did. Do you remember what it did?
No. I think it was supposed to cure... It
cured something.
Some brain disease, I think.
Something like that. It doesn't really matter.
But it was very high tech.
And then it gets stolen. There's only like a small team of them and they're all there and they're the only ones that would have had access to it. The head guy puts them all in this room after he's had them searched, stripped down to their underwear, and he's like, you guys are gonna go in there until you tell me who it is. And there's like fighting amongst themselves, and then the guy's like, I'm gonna kill all of you until you tell me who stole it.
And he like turns on the gas.
And they start like choking, and then the mice in there that were in there with them die, and they're like, he's gonna kill jealous, including his wife. His wife is in here.
We're not going to say who did it or why, but there is a great twist again.
And I've just got to say, the main character is a dick.
Yep.
All right, so the next one is called The Old School. And this one was kind of weird. The twist wasn't as good as this one because I definitely saw it coming.
Yeah.
But it was still cute. It was good. Basically, they've refurbished this really old school that had been shut down after kind of there was an incident with these three kids that went missing. This new teacher has moved in and is like investigating this tragedy, trying to find out what happened to these kids and their mom and all this stuff. And there's definitely some ghost like stuff going on, but that's pretty much the extent of that one. We don't want, without giving away the ending. So the last one was called The Elephant in the Room. Would you say this one was the weirdest? That's, remember, they all dressed up in costumes.
Yes, that it was really weird. So
I didn't hate it though.
So what happens is there's this big office party, and they call it a seasonal party. It's not really a Halloween party, but everyone is dressed as an animal. They're furries, right? They have, they're dressed as bears and elephants and cougars,
well,
and stuff.
It's an office party, and apparently they decided on this theme
like months ago.
What kind of theme is this?
It's a weird ass Scandinavian thing.
It's not a Halloween party.
No, it's just a dress up and spend money on a costume.
It's like the end of summer party or something like that.
Yeah, it's weird. But apparently there was a girl who fell to her death off of a roof.
And no, she's not dead. She's in a coma.
Right, but she fell off the roof and two of the coworkers saw it. The whole time we're kind of talking and following these two people
that are new to the company.
And they're trying to find out actually what happened to her.
Because no one will talk about it.
And they find out that she was actually bullied by these two folks that were on the rooftop. And there's speculation that she was being bullied, that there was information that they didn't want to get out. Like they were, you know, making fun of her. They could have possibly pushed her off the roof. Like I said, no spoilers.
Things aren't always as they seem.
She's really fun anthology.
Yeah, I really liked it. I mean, we've actually watched a couple Norwegian shows lately.
Yeah.
They're not bad.
But I felt like this was different. I think it made you think a little bit more.
It had a nice tone that was different from American television. Sometimes I really just don't like British television. No offense. I know there's a lot of people that are really into it, but it's just not my thing. I don't get their sense of humor, but I felt like I understood this a little better. I related to it better.
Yeah, I felt like this was more psychological horror and it didn't rely too much on jump scares or gore.
But there was gore.
Right, but it didn't lean so heavily in it that you're like, oh, well, just another slasher flick. Like, no, it makes you think and the twists really make it worth a watch.
Yeah, I thought it was super good. So if you like horror, I think you should check it out.
Cool.
It was definitely more classic horror than some of the other stuff on the list.
Let's switch gears over to Halloween Wars.
Halloween Wars is basically, there's different teams, and on each team, they have a pumpkin carver, someone that does sugar work, and then someone that does cake decorating. Yeah, cake fondant Rice Krispie work.
Yes.
And they all have to work together, and they each create a little mini at the beginning, and then a final thing, and then each week, somebody gets voted off and sent home.
Yeah, we watch so much Face Off, and it's essentially like a Face Off type show with
edibles.
Right. And then at the end, they judge it based on your theme, the execution, and the little tasting treat. They actually make a
tasting element.
A tasting element for.
Some of the tasting elements this one chef came up with were so interesting. He made this like caramelized mousse thing in a bone.
Right. It was made with bone broth. And so he actually took all of the marrow out, mixed it into the dessert, and then refilled the bone with the dessert. It was very interesting.
I don't think I would ever order that, but I would try it if someone offered it to me.
There was also caramelized
insects.
Cricket popcorn, right?
It was kind of like a mix. He was very gourmet, and I would say that he was the best classical dessert person on the, like, he made some high scale food.
Right. I think we started with, what was it, six teams to begin
with?
Something
like that.
It was either five or six teams to begin with, and little by little you find there's a theme. You're just like, okay, well, a monster blind date, or creature from the depths, or something to do with,
no, there was like a monster like support group.
Yeah, and there was one like a family vacation.
Yeah, stuff like that.
Right, and so they had to integrate the Halloween elements into the theme and come up with essentially
a display.
Yeah, a display.
And it had to include each of the three elements.
And everybody stays busy, so obviously they lean heavily into cake and desserts and making it foodie. But the pumpkin itself, it's not jack-o'-lantern-y. Instead of using one large pumpkin and just making, oh, this is a pumpkin inside of a thing, they actually cut the pumpkin into a lot of different pieces, so you have to choose a really large pumpkin and cut it in sections and carve the different pieces into, like, different heads, different appendages, anything that is kind of, like, large and stocky, you can cut it off and carve pumpkin out of it.
There were some incredible displays.
There was one, and there was a monster coming out from behind a couch.
Yeah.
And that monster was actually made out of pumpkin, but because his head was so heavy, it couldn't, like, pop up and scare like they wanted to. It was supposed to be a jump scare thing, and it couldn't jump because it was so heavy.
Some of these creatures were incredible, and some of the sugar work, I don't know if y'all know much about sugar work, but sugar work's incredibly difficult. I did a little bit of cake decorating when I was growing up. I mean, a significant amount. It's not just a little bit. I was in a couple competitions, but...
No biggie.
I'm just saying, I'm nowhere near their level. Like, no. Not... And it's been such a long time.
You're also a kid, like...
I mean, yeah, a teenager, but... Sugar work was hard. I've only done sugar work one time. It was really difficult.
I really liked that. It was like a two-tone doll type thing. Remember, it was like red and white?
Yeah.
And it was like split down the middle and they fused them so perfectly. It was like seamless. You couldn't tell.
If you're looking for something really intricate and interesting to look up videos of sugar work. Some of the work is so delicate and incredible looking. They blow balloons in them.
There's like wings on some insects. And one of them had like a cool tentacle arm that was made out of glass sugar.
It's like working with glass, only more fragile. It's like, if you imagine...
But not as hot.
You've seen them working with glass at, you know, fairs and TV and stuff. It's like that, only with sugar.
Yeah, and so you can crunch into it. Yummy, yummy. But in the end, it comes down to a final two. The one team leaned heavily into horror comedy. Like, all of them had a really funny element. All the faces were very cartoony. In the end, the other team ended up winning because they just, like...
Their monster was incredible.
They scared the shit out of me. Like, it was really good.
It was the best. It was made out of pumpkin and cake, and it was incredible looking.
It was so good. And I really enjoy shows like that. If I'm being honest, I like cooking shows where it's more about the flavor and the presentation of the food and not making a display out of it.
Really?
Versus when I want to see displays and things, I did like the things like Face Off or set design or things like that.
But here's my thing.
That's what it is.
I can't taste any of it, so I don't care what it tastes like.
You just want to see what it looks like?
Yeah, like, I think doing sugar work and carving stuff, that's more impressive to me because I can't taste any of it.
Well, see, I like Cutthroat Kitchen. That's fun for me.
But they'll always be like, I use these asparagus hearts mixed with this beef liver, and then I added cherry Pop-Tarts on top. Like, what?
Yeah, asparagus doesn't even have a heart. That's an artichoke.
You're right.
But we don't eat either, so...
You know what I mean. They're always, like, the most weird ingredients.
It's fancy.
You ever seen, Chopped?
Yeah.
Chopped's got some weird food.
Today's secret ingredient, beer!
I hate when they're like, I made a deconstructed whatever. Like, stop making deconstructed
tacos.
It's like,
you know what a deconstructed taco is? Nachos. That's fucking nachos. You just invented nachos. Good job.
A tostada. Like,
good job.
Stop.
You're making leaps and bounds in culinary arts with your nachos.
I made a deconstructed sandwich. Bro, it's not a sandwich anymore.
So, open-faced bread with some soup drizzled over the top? What the hell is that?
If I have to see one more deconstructed food, I swear to God.
No, I think that's what they use when they're like, it's not working out. Smash it with a hammer. Now it's deconstructed.
No, but some of them go in and they're like, I'm going to make a deconstructed apple pie, but I'm going to use beef. What? It's apple pie!
And somebody's like, I get beef Wellington and the cherry really comes out. It's like, no, it's fucking gross. What are you even doing with your life?
Like, how are you eating that?
I just order Sloppy Joe, man. I'm easy.
Can I just get a normal pie? Like,
sometimes getting fancy is good, though. Like, you remember Voodoo Donuts?
Yeah, but there's a certain level. I watched this show. It was like Chopped Junior. And this kid, I swear to God, he made this fish thing. I don't know what the technique is. I'm obviously not a professional chef, but it looked like he covered it in like clay sand stuff, put it all over the fish. The fish's head and tail were sticking out, and then they like cut into the clay sand and peel it and then eat the fish out of the middle. Like, what? I swear it was the weirdest thing I've ever seen. And
that sounds disgusting.
And the judges loved it. I think he ended up winning the whole thing. But he was like 8 years old or something like that.
With his fucking mud pie fish.
Yeah, and I was like, bro, I don't know how to cook fish. What? Chop Jr., like, astounds me. Because they'll be kids, I think, 8 to 12 or yeah. 8 to 13
and
or
I'm
something.
And I'm over here like, I burned a meatloaf. I'm a fucking grown-ass man, and these kids are just, like, killing it. Yeah, we get HelloFresh, and we're like, oh my god, we're gourmet.
Yeah, we made pork schnitzel, and we were like, oh my god.
It's like, it literally lays it out for you. Like, there is no guesswork. Ta-da, gourmet.
Let's move on.
Yeah.
Before I get more mad about... So, let's talk about lore. Lore was the only non-fiction thing
but
we
it,
want.
It was slightly fictional in that it was a lot... like it was, like, dramatized and they added dialogue that probably didn't happen.
It's more based on... It is based on fictional... or on true events.
Yes.
But it's kind of where myths came from.
Right. It's kind of like where myth meet real life.
Based on a podcast, or I'm not sure if the podcast is based on it or if it's based on the podcast. There's a podcast called Lore as well. Okay. And they're hosted by the same guy, Aaron Mankey.
Aaron Mankey?
We made fun of his name every time. There's nothing wrong with his name, but we'd be like, Mankey?
Monkey?
Mankey?
No, Monkey.
Every time. It was a really good show, and he's really good at telling a story.
There's a difference between this and, like, themed shows. Like, we've been watching a little bit of Eli Roth, his History of Horror type stuff. What mm-hmm. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, it's called Eli Roth's History of Horror.
Yeah, we've seen, like, a whole season and a half of it. But it picks a particular genre, right? Like, witches, zombies, ghosts,
and then
children.
And they talk about different...
Several different movies within that.
Right.
But lore is different in that it picks a topic like werewolves, and rather than be like, here are a lot of werewolf myths.
It talks about some of where they came from.
And it chooses one main story that is based in truth, that has a lot of documentation, and it kind of reenacts the whole thing. Intermittently throughout that story, they throw in a lot of extra trivia, a lot of context, where certain lore and fairy tales and thing actually pull their inspiration from.
Why don't we give an example and we talk about the first story? So basically, the first story is about this family who several members are getting consumption, tuberculosis.
Yes.
Some of the townspeople come in and just, they all know it's a disease. The townspeople are like, no, one of your family members is coming back from the grave and sucking the life out of the other family members. And they're like, we have to check all the bodies to save your son who's dying of tuberculosis.
Right, so they end up like digging up
all
graves.
The bodies. The first two have been in the ground for a while.
So they're like decomposed.
And the third one, his daughter, she died during winter. So she was in like a freezer basically all winter, and then they buried her. So now modern day viewers would know that she wouldn't decompose if she's frozen, but they didn't know that back then.
So they're like, she must be the one sucking the life force out of all these dead people
because she's not very decomposed. So they put a stake in her heart, they cut her open, and they take out like her liver and something else. They burn it, and then they feed the ashes in a drink to the sun in hopes that he will live.
And he ends up dying.
He dies anyway. The reason it's vampire lore is because when you decompose, the skin like around your fingernails and your hair and all of that recedes.
Okay.
So it seems like your fingernails and hair and stuff is still growing. And so they think, they go and they see that you're not decomposing properly, in mm-hmm. their opinion. They would assume that you're a vampire. You're coming out of your grave. That's where they get the, you know, sleeping in coffins thing. You're coming out of the grave and you're sucking the life out of people at night. And that's where the vampire part comes in.
No, but like, the thing is that this particular episode, I don't think it even says the word vampire until the very, very end. And then it like clicks into place. It says, and vampire.
I listened to the podcast episode, so I can give you a little bit more.
See, that's why you want to talk about it, because you know a little bit more about it.
So basically, this story was highly publicized, and it kicked off this whole vampire craze in this area. And this is like the first quote-unquote vampire in America. Now, there was a traveling theater group over here from Europe. They picked up a couple copies of this newspaper talking about it, and one of the guys that picked up a copy happened to be Bram Stoker.
That name sounds familiar.
And so after he picked up a copy, when he took it back, he used her story and Vlad the Impaler's story and put them together and wrote Dracula.
Interesting.
And so that is where the lore of vampires really started, is with Vlad and her, I think her name was Mary. It was an old school name.
No, but see, I really liked there's six different episodes. There's one about lobotomies and like mental institutions.
That one was just terrible because lobotomies are low-key horrible.
But that one's not so much supernatural as it was just kind of a horror thing.
It was about the lore of like altering the brain and changing things.
Right. And there was one about changelings, about someone who acted very differently, and then they were like, oh, you must be a fairy
posing. A changeling is a fae who comes in and replaces a person and looks just like them, and then, like, I guess they kill their family and stuff.
Right, but this guy's wife, she comes in and she's, like, wearing dark pantyhose and it's like, a witch! Right?
But it's a fae.
Yeah, like, there's this long thing and it goes into all sorts of things about doppelgangers and stuff like that. And then there's an episode about ghosts, one about werewolves, which I love because, you know, I'm a werewolf guy. The final one would be dolls, and I hate creepy dolls. And the doll in this one was named Robert. I thought, we saw a movie, it was kind of like a Chucky type knockoff,
mm-hmm.
called Robert.
We never saw it,
but it was always like a cheap thing at Target or Kmart or whatever. And we were like, oh, haha, it's a knockoff of Chucky. No, apparently Robert was fucking real, like just as real as Annabelle. They had this doll, and apparently it was like terrorizing this house, and this young boy, he ends up moving away to like live with someone else or military school or somewhere.
Yeah.
But the doll keeps terrorizing his mom.
You can go and visit Robert. I think he's down in Florida and he's in a museum.
Yeah.
Now, there are rules to visiting Robert.
Right? Like, you can't take a picture unless you ask for permission and then get a sign that it's okay. Otherwise, bad things happen to you.
And you have to say hello and goodbye, and if you say anything bad about Robert, bad things will happen to you.
Right. But you greet him properly, you bow, you have to make your case and shit.
I know that sounds crazy, but there are tons and tons of letters of people that didn't do the right things and then bad things happen.
And they're like,
to them.
Please, please undo it. I'm so sorry. I should have respected you.
And then the bad things stop.
But overall, lore is a very interesting approach to telling stories like this.
Let me just say, Aaron Mankey does a fantastic job of telling a story. I could never tell a story that well by myself the way he does.
I think being able to command the story without anybody to bounce off of must seem very monotonous if you're not the right type of person.
One of the other things we watched, they were called Bite Size Halloween. They were just little...
They're all like 2 to 3 minutes long.
Yeah, none of them are longer than 4 minutes.
Quite literally bite-sized. Shorter than a YouTube video.
They're on Hulu. They're really good if you're just wanting something like real quick, little scare.
And literally you can just scroll through, find one at random. You don't have to watch them in order. They're all one shots. You can go to season 1, 2, 3, what, however many there is.
They've posted a bunch. They're like 30 some episodes
There's dozens of episodes.
We'll definitely watch some more. We've watched 10.
Because it takes no time. You literally just show it, like turn it on, and before you know it, 4 or 5 of them are through and you're like, oh, that was cool.
Do you want to talk about a couple of our favorite ones?
Sure. One of my favorites was The Mime, and that's episode 9. And The Mime is about a character who's on the side of the road doing her thing. Someone kicks over the money hat, right? There's a hat where they're collecting change.
And he's like a real dick about it.
And he like kicks it over. The Mime, she actually traps him in a box and like does the whole, oh, there's an invisible wall. And then he gets trapped. He's like pushing against it. Like there's a wind blowing and he's miming, but really acting against these forces that she's putting on him. Very much like a Mr. Mime type character, but it's a really, really fun premise. And I got a kick out of how she just tormented this guy.
I really like Devil Vac. This lady's husband brings home a Roomba, which I desperately want to Roomba. Then it opens a portal to hell. I mean,
big giant black hole.
I mean, that's the whole story. Like, it's literally a minute long.
Yeah, I thought there was gonna be much more, and then it's like, oh.
It ain't playing. Like, it's over. It cleans for like a second and then it turns its little red light on and opens the portal.
Another one, there was a basketball court and this girl finds a basketball and it's like floating around and stuff and she thinks it's haunted and stuff, and so she like takes it and bounces it a few times and then throws it into nowhere and it gets caught by nothing.
And it turns out that she's a ghost the whole time.
And these kids who are playing basketball just saw this little ghost girl play
like,
with her basketball.
Carves in the bench like, I'm still here.
Yeah.
It was kind of sad. That one was sad.
It's really creepy though.
And then there was Monstagram, which this mom is obsessed with taking pictures of her kid and posting them on Instagram. And he's like, if you get over 100 likes...
on any particular picture.
The monster will come, and Monstergram will come and kill you, and he has a rubber ducky on his head. And she's like, that's nonsense.
And she posts it, and it's like, oh, look, 50 likes. Hey, I'm up to 80 likes. 95. And he's like, don't do it. Delete it, Mom. If you get 100, it's bad. And it's bad.
It's very bad.
It's pretty bad. Cool. But it's just little things like that, and some of them have different tones. Some of them are to the point. Some of them are a bit more
funny.
Yeah.
Some of them are scarier. Some of them are just like, whoa, that's weird.
Yeah. Some are kind of vague on like the ending, like you don't really know. But overall, it's really fun to just kind of go, binge a couple, get a little bit of a spook.
So if you need some spook in a hurry,
click it, 3 minutes later, done.
The other thing we watched on Hulu is the first season of Castle Rock.
Castle Rock is actually kind of an amalgamation of a lot of Stephen King horror elements. It doesn't follow one particular story, but it's more like taking elements from things like Shawshank Redemption. There are references to things like Cujo, It's located
in... The Shining. It's in Maine.
It's in Maine, like everything else, but Castle Rock, Maine has...
They even reference Derry being close by.
Right, so it's definitely in the Stephen King universe.
It's almost like if Stephen King and J.J. Abrams made something together.
And the story follows a guy...
Henry Deaver.
And Henry Deaver is an adopted son who has moved away from Castle Rock to become a lawyer. And he comes back to visit his mother with Alzheimer's, who's...
No. He comes back because they find the boy in the cage, and the boy, the only thing he says is Henry Deaver.
Well, he's not a boy. He's an adult.
He's a teenager, but they think he's a boy.
Yeah.
He says the name Henry Deaver, and one of the guards calls Henry and is like, this boy's asking you for you to be his attorney.
Yeah.
And so that's why he comes back.
That's why he comes back. But he goes back to this town, and it's where he grew up because his mother's there. She's shacked up with the old sheriff, but she has Alzheimer's. The boy in the cage is played by... Skarsgård. Bill Skarsgård.
It's played by Pennywise,
which is great, by the way. He's such a good actor.
He does the eye thing too in one scene. He's so creepy.
He is. I love it. He's been in this cage, and the cage is actually at Shawshank. The guards there, they're really abusive, and there's one guard.
That's the only nice guard.
He ends up losing his damn mind because of what's happening in the prison.
The idea is that the old sheriff, who kills himself right at the beginning, he was keeping this boy in the cage because he thought he was basically the devil.
Yeah, and if he got out, bad things would happen.
He says, this is why bad things have always happened in Castle Rock, because of this boy.
Big helicopter crashes, school buses getting hit by trains, fires. Everything weird.
Now, Henry has a mystery going on with him where when he was a kid, he disappeared. I think it was like 11 days.
It was several days
in the woods in the middle of winter in Maine where it's cold as hell.
Yeah, it's Canada plus.
His dad died. Henry came wandering out of the woods like nothing had happened.
Yeah, he had no knowledge of any of it. There's also a subplot with his friend who's a psychic. No, there's a lot of stuff that happens like in the last few episodes. It feels like it was later.
And Sissy Spacek plays the mom.
Yeah. Yeah, she does such a good job.
It's sometimes she's very lucid, and then other times, like, she's not there at all.
Mm-hmm.
And she, like, literally talks to Henry, and she's like, you know, I'm not racist like everyone else. I adopted a black son.
It's like, Mom,
that's me. I know. And everyone kind of hates Henry. He's literally, like, the only black person in town, isn't he?
I
think that was intentional to show, like, why everyone hated him so much.
Right.
It was more subtle than some of the other shows we watched,
mm-hmm.
but there was definitely racism going on in this town. I mean, I liked it. It was not traditional scary. It definitely had its moments.
No, but see, not all Stephen King is traditionally scary. Like, some things are really, like, thrillers or they make you think. And I feel like this one has a lot of sci-fi elements that kind of make you think. Especially in the last, I would say, 3 episodes.
Oh my god, so, it's so confusing. The whole show is just like, what is going on? And then in the last couple episodes...
There's one episode that's just totally out of left field and you have no idea what the fuck is going on.
And then they just start wrapping up everything. And it just like, whoa. At the end, you're like, I now understand everything. But like, whoa.
No, I'll be perfectly honest. I was kind of a phone warrior during the first few episodes of this. I was watching, but I wasn't really watching because I was like, oh, you know, it's Stephen King stuff. It's an interesting show, but I'm following along, but it's not too interesting. By episode 7 or 8, I was invested. I was like, what the hell is going on? It made me put down my phone. And that's saying something.
Would you watch season 2? I know season 2 is all about Misery and stuff.
I like Misery, and I really hope Kathy Bates at least makes a...
I know they give a lot cameo. I don't know if she makes a cameo, but I know they reference her a lot.
Well, that's good. My whole thing is that it's going to be different, but knowing what the showrunners did with season one, it's kind of like American Horror Story, where we get something different every time, but because the showrunners and the actors are roughly the same, we know what we're expecting, which is a big surprise, a lot of twists, some good murders.
But I'm sure it'll still surprise us.
I'm sure season two will be just as good. We just didn't have a chance. Speaking of not having a chance, we were planning to watch more. There's just so much good stuff. We did not get around to watching Sabrina.
Or Blythe Manor.
Or season nine
of American Horror Story.
Or Ratched.
Or no, we wanted to watch so much more, but there was literally so... We crammed so much horror into the month of October, and we still have more to watch.
Right, there's a half dozen shows that I'm like, we have to watch this. Now, I think Sabrina's the last season is coming out in December.
So we'll probably...
We may watch both of those at the same time.
Yeah, we'll probably watch them while we're on hiatus and then talk about them when we get back.
Yeah, that's very likely. That way we can binge a little bit and catch up. But those are kind of the things that we wish we'd been able to watch. And we're sorry, very briefly, Eli Roth, we already mentioned History of Horror, but there's also another show called Cursed Films.
It's not by Eli Roth. It's by Shudder.
It's a Shudder original. But we watched two episodes of that.
And we also watched another Shudder original called Creepshow.
We did watch Creepshow.
Based on the original Stephen King movies. We can just talk about the general premise of Creepshow. Basically, Creepshow is like anthology again. We like anthology.
We watched that a while ago, didn't we?
Yeah, but we've watched some recently. Two stories an episode.
Yeah.
Like, each one's just a different horror one. The one I remember the most, so this must have been the scariest one to me, is there's, like, a storm going on. Mm-hmm. And remember those creatures were, like, creature, like, killed his dad. And it was just, like, killing everyone in town. Do you kind of remember that one?
No, here's the ones I remember.
It had to do with, like, the beer or something that he was drinking.
I remember the monkey's paw. I remember the one, there was one about a genie.
I do remember the genie one.
That was a very interesting one. It was all the town folk, and they kind of put their head up in the football field, and the monster had to go after them.
Yeah, that was Creepshow.
That was Creepshow? Yeah, so see, I remember a lot of them. It's just, it has been a minute, and with all this horror that we've watched.
I will say, the genie one was probably my favorite.
That was so different.
He finds this guy, like, in a suitcase.
Like, cramped in there.
He's like, you gotta help me out. But every time this guy's in pain, coins come out, like gold coins.
It like comes out of his mouth or something.
And at first he's like, well, I'll help this guy get out of the suitcase. Then he realizes that every time he makes him hurt, he gets coins, and the more he hurts him, the more coins he gets.
So they're like finding different ways to hurt him. They're throwing him down flights of stairs, they're hitting him with sledgehammers,
stabbing him and stuff.
Yeah, awful things. And meanwhile he's just like, blah, 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 gold, blah, 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 the whole time.
It starts off with the best intentions, but it ends very poorly.
And much like genie stories do, they're trapped in a lamp. Well, the suitcase is a lamp, and if you free a genie, someone else has to go in the lamp. Boy gets too big for his britches.
I liked that one.
But it was really good.
Cursed Films.
I liked Cursed Films. There were two that we watched. The first one we watched was all about...
The Crow.
The Crow. And for those of you who don't know, it was a 90s film. It was based on an indie comic, and it starred Bruce Lee's son.
Brandon.
Brandon Lee.
And he was... Basically, this was going to be his film debut, breaking away... Like, he'd been in other films.
Right.
But this was going to be his first real,
this is
like...
big superhero film. Now, granted, this is the 90s, so big superhero is kind of an understatement.
He was going to break away from his dad's, like, legacy. Partway through.
And it was near the end. There was, like, 5 or 6 days left of filming.
Yeah, like, he gets shot.
Right, so what happens is they have these... They were going to throw a knife at him, right? But instead, they were like, no, we're going to replace it with a gun. And they get this prop gun, and it says you're going to shoot right at him, pow, 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 and he's going to still come at you. The problem is that they left an old slug in the chamber, so when they...
A piece of it.
So they shot a blank, and rather than clear out the chamber... Then there was a piece of slug left. And so when they shot the blank behind it, it ended up shooting the fragment through...
Into Brandon.
Into Brandon, and it ended up killing the star of the film.
I mean, there were other cursed things that happened. Like...
Oh, yeah, there was, like, a storm of the century. There was all sorts of, like, what was, like, permit problems and actors dropping out. But because Brandon Lee ends up dying, there was a character that actually didn't even get to make the film because most of his scenes were going to be shot at the very end. And rather than just scrap the film, because they put so much into it, this was kind of his legacy, they ended up putting together a film based on the footage they had. Any other scenes that would have the crow in it, they took the stunt double, had a prosthetic makeup put on him, and it looked just like Brandon. Mm-hmm. And it was really creeping people out, because it's like, this man just died. We had a funeral for him, and yet he's still walking around. They took out his dialogue. They made sure to keep things more minimal so that we wouldn't know technically in the movie it wasn't him. But I've never seen the movie, and it made me really want to watch it.
Yeah, I think it'll be a movie we cover at some point. Maybe we should do a whole Cursed Films episode.
I just feel like this is an excuse just to watch good movies that you want to fucking watch. Movies that we haven't seen, which is kind of our thing, like watching new movies and commenting on them.
But we haven't talked about them, so does it count?
The other cursed film was the Twilight Zone movie, and for anybody who's watched it, I think it came out in like 1990 or something, right?
I don't know.
There were actually four films, like each 20 to 30 minutes long. And each of them had a different team.
Came out in 83.
Ooh, a little earlier than I thought. There were four different movies, four different directors, teams, actors, the whole nine yards. And they were all spliced together as essentially four Twilight Zone episodes.
And the most cursed part had to do with the first one.
I'm pretty sure they filmed them consecutively.
I don't know.
Or not concurrently, concurrently.
I don't know if they went what order they filmed them in.
Right, but regardless, it's the first one to occur in the film.
It's basically about a man who is a racist, and they transform him into, like, a Jew in World War II.
Right, and that's the only one that I remember, because I remember seeing the film, and apparently there were a lot more scenes to it. So instead of him just being a Jew in Nazi Germany, he was also
in, like, the
Black in the Civil War. No, he was, like, black in slavery and... Korea or somewhere.
No, he was in Korea. The Korean scene is what we're gonna talk about.
The Korean War. But there's a lot of different areas where they send him back so he can learn the error of his ways.
Basically, the scene was he and these two children were going to be running away from this village that was exploding, and they were gonna get picked up by a helicopter. There was all these things about, well, you can't use children at night, because that was the rules back then.
Yeah.
They went and hired two kids out of the local village, I think. The local town, I don't know.
Yeah.
And then they were like, you have to be careful of the explosives and all this stuff. And the guy, like, this poor man, the special effects guy, was...
He's the one who's being interviewed most of the time as they're showing you footage and things like that.
He talks about how he was like, we have to be so careful. Like, I want to know where every little explosive is. And he talks about how there was explosives he found that weren't where they were supposed to be. And he was furious about it.
And meanwhile, John Landon, I think it was, the director... He didn't care. Wanted to do things his way. He didn't care. He was willing to skirt all sorts of rules and regulations and things just to make the movie. And that's why he hired these kids. He wanted to film it all at night. In this big action scene, they rehearsed it, they tracked it, they showed it, and when they finally did it...
So in the scene, he's running with the kids.
Yeah.
And the village exploding.
There's too many explosions.
And the helicopter's coming, but the helicopter gets too... The explosions get too close to the helicopter.
Right, because it's not like the helicopter was diving into them. Like, the explosions were just really big.
And it causes the helicopter to crash. They show this footage, and, I mean, it's not super graphic.
It doesn't zoom in or anything.
I mean, and the camera footage is from the 80s, so it's kind of old. But basically, it chops them in half.
You can clearly see the propeller blades slice straight through him and these kids. And meanwhile, it cuts back to the set director, and he is just broken. Absolutely broken.
Well, I mean, his career was over.
Right, it was his first big break, and he ended up being broken by it. But there was this huge lawsuit saying all sorts of negligence. They paid a lot of fines, but they tried to go after John Landis for negligent homicide, for manslaughter.
It was basically just a freak accident.
And the jury was like, look, we can't blame him. Accidents happen. It's not manslaughter. It's still awful.
Yeah.
And he still made movies. It was like a 5-year-long battle. Meanwhile, he's just around making movies. He didn't just stop making movies after that accident.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Several of the people, their careers were over, so I didn't know if his movies, his career were over.
You know, apparently his wasn't. Apparently his did just fine.
But yeah, so, I mean, I guess he did make movies after this. I mean, he made Spider-Man 2.
It was a long legal battle, and just seeing them lead up to the story and watching what happened is just, it's fucking heartbreaking. We're going to watch more episodes of Cursed Films.
Yeah.
I do think. It's going to be great. Oh, the last one we're going to talk about is Lovecraft Country. All right, so what's the basic premise?
The main character's name is Tick, and he finds out that his ancestors have some kind of secret. Basically, it ends up being magic, and it sets him and Letty and his dad and the rest of their family off on this journey to basically learn about magic, and they get all mixed up in this world of these white folks being casting magic spells and trying to kill Tick to use his blood for spells.
I guess it's important to note that everybody in this is black.
All the main characters.
Right.
Except for the villains.
Right. The reason we say these evil, nasty white folks is because this is set in the 1950s. It's in the South in the 1950s, and Atticus, Tick, all the main characters are from the black community there in the South. What state is this in? Can you remember? Was it...
I don't know.
Regardless.
I don't think they live in the South. I think, like, they travel to the South.
They travel a lot.
So his Uncle George drives around plotting this guidebook that is basically a guide not just to traveling, but to places that are safe for black people to go without getting murdered.
Yeah, like a white folks trap.
This is during the time when there were still, like, sundown towns. And for those who don't know what a sundown town is, it's basically if you're black and you're in the town after sundown, they go and kill you.
Yeah, it's open season to get lynched or worse.
It is Lovecraftian. There are Lovecraft-type monsters, but a lot of it is more the monsters of just racism.
No, and there's a really great duality of it, because there are some really terrible-type monsters. There's magicians, there's beasts, there's ghosts, there's, like, demon-type characters, skin crawlers, what are they called? Shapeshifters.
Yeah.
There's all sorts of things.
There's the Yahimi, that she's, like, a she's a man and a woman, remember? From that couple episodes?
Yeah, and then there's this Korean character, and she's an evil fox spirit.
Kamiho.
Kamiho.
So she's a Kamiho.
But there's even, like, you know, time travel and paradoxes and all sorts of weird sci-fi shit. It is very heavy in the sci-fi. Oddly enough, that's not the main draw of the show. Not really.
Basically, the story is about Tick and Letty, his girlfriend, and
her sister Ruby.
And Tick's dad, his uncle George, his uncle's wife,
Hippolyta,
and their daughter Dee. Mm-hmm. And then on the bad side, you've got Christina and all the other white folks that don't really... But, I mean, she's the main villain.
Yeah, but most of the white people, even though some of them have good minor roles, that's just exactly what they are. They're dispensable.
Can I talk about how Christina is the whitest of white people as well? She's not just white, but she's so pale. She's blonde.
But she needs to go to a tanning salon,
and
for real.
She needs to just go outside once in a while. You gotta get out of your magic dungeon. And there's all these creepy spells, like turning into someone else, protection spells, all this sort of stuff. And there's all this, like, biblical stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot of biblical references. There's a lot of, like, magical books and literature.
And then the language they use for magic is the language of Adam.
There's no free spell.
No, everything cost. Right. I mean, I don't want to give away too many spoilers, because really, it was quite the journey.
Oh, yeah.
And you find out a lot along the way, and you're going to have to pay close attention.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe watch those recaps at the beginning of the episode, previously on.
The first episode, you watch through it, and there's next to no supernatural anything.
Until the very
end. At the very, very beginning, Tick has a dream where it is just like from a level. Craft. He's in war. He's having a dream about the Korean War that he just came back from.
Kind of looks almost like War of the Worlds.
Yeah, just, you know, space spaghetti monsters flying through the air and shit, and lasers. And the whole show is really just setting up this family, what they are, unremarkable they are. They're just people trying to get by. And then on one of their journeys, they're trying to find their missing dad. At Tick's missing dad. Then they just kind of, like, throw them to the...
Wolves?
Well, the monsters.
Well, the monster wolves. The
monster wolf.
They answer to dog whistles, so...
Yeah, so it is kind of wolfy.
And don't get attached to anybody.
Yeah. Anybody is expendable.
There are definitely some major character deaths in the first season, which is unusual to have so many.
Especially even characters that they set up, like, oh, they're going to be really important. like, I think it's episode 3 out of 10, where one of the main characters that they set up.
I know that the book is different, too.
This is based on a book?
Mm-hmm. And in the book, Christina is actually a dude. I forget his name, but it starts with a C. And then I know one of the main characters they kill off doesn't die in the book and is majorly important. I have not read the book, so I don't know.
So they kind of pull a Walking Dead type thing.
I guess.
Where they introduce all the characters, but they change it up just enough so that it's different. Overall, it's a really fun show, and I wanted to watch this one because it is a little bit more sci-fi.
I mean, it's
still horror. It's very scary in a lot of ways. The spell that's cast on Dee with those little girls. Mm. There's a book in their house. It's Uncle Tom's Cabin, but the cover has a little black girl, and she has her braids and wearing her outfit. In this curse, it bastardizes this little picture.
Imagine the little girl from Us meets the two girls from The Shining.
Yeah.
Put them together, and that's kind of what it looks like.
And they move around, really skeletal and
kind of like
zombies. It's really creepy. This is very sexual liberating.
And women are still really oppressed.
Mm-hmm. There's one particular episode where Ruby gets a job at a predominantly white retail store, and she finds out that the boss just hires the colored girl.
That is pretty.
Because he wants to abuse her. She does not like it, but the whole idea of liberation, both for men and women.
White men got it good in the world of Lovecraft country, but ain't nobody else got it good. And you're gonna hate all of them.
Christina, even though she's a main character, there's not a redeeming white person in this whole damn show.
She almost has, a couple moments where I thought, oh, well, maybe they're gonna, make her kind of good, but then she didn't, so.
Nope.
But I don't want to spoil too much, because it is really an experience, I think. I like the Korean, lore they brought into mm-hmm. it.
There's so many different themes and elements that they throw in, kind of wrapped around the racial injustices of the 1950s. On top of that, science fiction, monsters, magic. Overall, a phenomenal show.
What have we got coming up?
All right. So, as you know, we are going to have a hiatus here coming up in December. So, we're only going to have, I think, 2 or 3 more episodes.
Are we going to put out a streaming episode for the first week of December?
Probably.
And then maybe a movies episode. So the second week of December will probably be our last episode for the year.
Right. So after this one, we're going to have the movies that we watched in October. So we're going to have 2 themed episodes after that. The first one is going to be the regular themed, which is going to be essentially B horror films, B and C horror films that are poorly rated. So we're going to enjoy that. And then the other one is going to be the theme mini, which is going to be werewolves versus vampires, kind of a versus type of thing.
Yeah, so we're gonna try something different. We've been trying out bunches of different things, and I'm gonna be team vampire.
And I'm team werewolf. But we're essentially just trying to throw it all against the wall and see what sticks, because in season 3, we really want to kind of hone in on what works and what we enjoy doing, and cutting out all the stuff that just seems kind of like going through the motions. We don't want to do anything extraneous if it's not worthwhile for you and for us. So after that, those 2 themed shows, we're going to have the stream mini for everything that we watched in the month of November, and then all the movies we watched in November. But that's going to come out probably the second week of December. So our hiatus is going to go from mid-December, probably through the end of January.
And then we'll probably, the first couple episodes we'll put out will be all the movies we liked from this year, we did last year, the kind of awards movie thing.
Yeah, the Real Romance Awards season 2. And then it'll be season 3 after the races. That's all we really have. So we are going to be wrapping up soon, but thank you everyone for listening. We really appreciate you.
I mean, we still got 4 more episodes before we
say goodbye. It's not like I'm saying goodbye. I'm just saying
it sounded like it. You were like, goodbye.
Goodbye.
I mean, that's all we got for you guys. I hope you enjoyed this episode.
Yeah, it was fun.
I hope you enjoyed some spooky stuff for October, and we're not quite done with spooky.
Yeah.
Let's just be honest. There aren't Thanksgiving movies, and
it's too early for Christmas shit.
So we're really just going to extend October and make it extra October.
Right. The movies that we watched in October, a lot of those were scary. Vampires, B-horror. Social media. @RealRomanceUCPN on Twitter. @RealRomance on Instagram and TikTok. We also have RealRomancePod@gmail.com is our email address if you want to reach out. personal stuff. Brittany's at BookNerd528 on Instagram, and I'm at BamfingBob on Twitter. And if you'd like, follow Undercover Capes on all the social medias, because they are our host network and they have a ton of fun stuff, not only movies, but comic books and toys and everything else. Much appreciation to Josh and the whole team there who makes all this possible.
And if you could just rate, review, subscribe.
And leave us a damn comment. We love hearing from you, and we don't hear near enough. The more we hear, the better we make it.
We're trying to make this better, trying to make it something decent, but how are we supposed to know what y'all like if y'all say nothing? I know y'all got anxiety, because I do.
Right. You can still be introverted and send a short email or say, hey friend, a good job.
Or bad job. I mean, your preference.
Yeah, I mean, wouldn't that suck? We do this for 2 years, and the first legitimate comment we get is like, you suck.
I mean, I've seen some hilarious comments on podcasts that are just like, just some more white people talking about nonsense they don't know nothing about. And I'm like, bro.
Joke's on you. We don't know nothing anyway.
All right, well, that's it for today, and we'll talk to you next time.
All right, stay safe. Keep it real. Bye, everybody. Thanks for listening to the Real Romance Stream Mini, brought to you by the Undercover Case Podcast Network. Please remember to rate, review, and subscribe, and to share with your friends.